Welcome once again to the Party of One podcast, the actual play RPG podcast where the gaming table is always set for two. I'm your host as always, Jeff Stormer, and this is part two of the Bloodbeam Badlands Fistful of Fangs trilogy. A trio of standalone episodes, each with their own unique guests that come together to create one ongoing interconnected story set in the world of Bloodbeam Badlands. An irradiated apocalyptic hellscape trapped under the eternal blazes of the Forever Dawn, a massive, blazing red sun. It is in this world that vampire gunslingers travel from place to place, shooting and fighting their way out of problems as best they can. You can learn more about Bloodbeam Badlands at videtiavaletti.itch.io, or you can check the show notes for more information. For now, lock and load, vampires, let's ride. Our guest this week is returning friend of the show, Palomi Praetap. Palomi is an art director, artist, and cast member on Skyjack's Courier's Call, the all-ages spin-off series to campaign Skyjack's, and genuinely one of my favorite people to chat with, play games with, just a wonderful human being. This episode, in addition to just being the sickest shit on the planet, was also just an opportunity to sit down with a really good friend and catch up and play games for a while, and I treasure that so, so much. You can check out all of Palomi's work at palomipraetap.com, or you can check the show notes for more information. But first, a note that this episode is sponsored by Multitude Productions and their Actual Play podcast, Join the Party, as part of their Direct Creator Support Initiative. The Actual Play community is full of incredible creators telling some of the most imaginative stories in all of entertainment, and as fans of the art form, Multitude want to keep finding new ways to support AP creators and their audiences. And to get an idea of some of the amazing work that's being done in the Actual Play space, look no further than Join the Party. Join the Party is an AP podcast focused on genre-pushing storytelling and celebrating the artistry of its cast and collaborators, and just being a love letter to the medium in general. Their current campaign, they're playing Masks, which is all about teenagers dealing with the drama of superhero high school. If you know me, you know that I love Masks a whole lot, and so that is extremely up my alley. And if you're a fan of Actual Play storytelling, you should absolutely go check it out and see if they become your actual favorite, well, maybe your second favorite Actual Play podcast. Check out Multitude and join the party at jointhepartypod.com or connect with them at jointhepartypod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Tumblr, Facebook, or Twitter, and be sure to let them know that Party of One sent you so that they know that their direct creator support initiative is working. And with all that said, let's go ahead and throw it over to me in the past so that he can get started with the show. Take it past me. Thanks, future me. I am so absolutely excited. I am sitting down with Palomi Praetap. Palomi, thank you so much for coming on Party of One.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited. We just went through character creation for the game that we're playing, and the word that I would use is giddy. Giddy is the word that
flavorful.
I would use.
It's flavorful. It's delicious. I feel like I'm going to be consuming a delicious and wonderful meal in a little bit.
I truly feel like we have already gotten the joyful experience that I wanted out of this recording, and we had not hit record yet. So at the top of the episode, why don't you take a moment and let our lovely listeners at home know about anything you've got going on that you might want them to know about?
Hey, hi everyone. My name is Palomi, as Jeff said. You can find me on the Skyjack's spinoff show, Courier's Call. I play Kieran Rao, a very determined they-them that is just trying to find their dad. And you can also find me getting married next year, which is a very interesting and strange thing for me to say, but I'm excited about it. And I'm doing that thing where my day job is a producer for merch, and I'm just I'm using my skills, Jeff.
I was so excited to hear that when you said that to me before the recording. I was exploded with joy, and like truly, the skills that you use in that process of like I don't think I had a better test of my project management skills than when I got married. Like, I don't like that should you should be able to list that on your resume of
I feel like
this wasn't a disaster, and that's because I fucking organized, you know, I coordinated with a lot of people's schedules. You should be allowed to at least put a section of the resume together.
I threw a wonderful event for my perfectionist client, me.
Me. Me and also my family. I am so excited. We've played games before, and the game that we are playing today, Bloodbeam Badlands, a role-playing game of vampires in the post-apocalyptic future, running and gunning, rooting and tooting their way through a blasted, irradiated landscape under a blood-red sun. Turns out this game is sick.
It's very sick. Hey, I just read the name Revolver Face. That's all I'm going to say.
And listener, if you're wondering what Revolver Face's deal is, you've already figured it out. So I want to talk to you at the very top of the episode. Talk to me about when I approached you with this game, and I approached you with this game because I knew in my heart when I was like, I'm looking for somebody who is interested in like big, weird world building stories, and also specifically stories in the sort of rootin' tootin' cowboy vampire space. Your name was the first on my list. And so like, talk to me about like your feelings about like the aesthetics of the West, the vampire aesthetic, all the sorts of things that what's got you excited about playing our game this week?
I think from the Western perspective, one of the things that I've had very easy access to basically my entire life is the high desert, Terlingua, Big Bend, further out to New Mexico. Like, these are places that my parents would visit frequently. These are places that I have fond memories in. Something about the high desert, especially in the wintertime, when I think things are a little bit more muted and a little bit more quiet because there's just not a lot of flora and fauna around, it is hauntingly beautiful. It is the kind of landscape that really makes you think in a very existential way. And I love that. I love that a landscape can do that to people now, still in our day and age. I think especially the indigenous peoples that live in the area appreciate so much this thing about the landscape as well. And it's something that I think it allows you to tap in a little bit more to parts of your brain that I don't think we have a need to tap into. I don't want to get too off topic, but I will say one time I did get lost in Big Bend, and the fear I knew.
I can imagine. I can truly like imagine. You know, that's the phrase "lost in Big Bend" is not necessarily something that you want to hear at any point.
I don't think I have felt fear like that ever again in my life. And it's a very formative experience. I'm fine. Like, I'm doing great. I think I am better as a person for that experience. And I think that's the only thing, like, that's that kind of thing only happens out in a landscape like that, out in a place like that.
That is sick. I mean, not sick that it happened to you. Like sick in the sense of like that brings such a visceral fear and like touched point that I'm excited to play around
mm-hmm,
with.
Mm-hmm, yep.
This is great. This rules. I'm excited. So I guess actually one thing we should do before we get into play is we should probably have like a very brief safety discussion just to make sure that like we're on the level, like this being a game that is going to play with violence and play with like specific genre tropes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's probably good to like sit down and just kind of cover like, hey, these are our lines and veils. I will tell you like my lines is obviously anything sexual violence, any harm towards children or non-magical animals is out the door. A veil on eye and teeth related injuries, as well as a line on plagues and pandemics. There's some specific genre disclaimers that I'll run through that the game outlines that I appreciate, but is there anything else on that list that you want excluded specifically?
Those work perfectly for me. In the past, I would say I'd have a line on large insectoid parts, but this is the kind of game where I want to make an exception and turn that into a veil, because it's weird. It's wild out here, and I want to capture that a little bit.
Okay. And then like we have the we have X and O cards. X card is a hard line of like, we're gonna stop and pause and remove an element. N is we're going to lightly move away from it without necessarily breaking the scene. And an O card is both a verbal check-in of like, hey, are we cool with this? Or an enthusiastic, yes, this is sick and I want to see more of it in play.
Awesome.
So we can, and we have open conversation as we talk through of like, hey, can we pivot around this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also, we edit, which is the other big safety tool of the show.
It's a great thing, editing.
So the three things that I do want to briefly cover that the game outlines is that vampires are cool. They have a bad history of being manipulative and taking agency away from people and used as allegory for all kinds of awful things and homophobic use. Obviously, we're not playing around in that space. Wastelands and gunslingers are cool, but like... But the Western genre also has a history of colonialism, racism, genocide, tragedy. We are going to be playing around in sort of the gunslinger space, but like avoiding some of the more problematic tropes associated with that. And also, like, this is an apocalypse game, but it is a larger than life apocalypse game. This is not about glorified misery. It's about being cool vampires and shooting guns and having cool fights.
We're trying to be sick as hell.
We're trying to be sick as hell is really the fundamental answer. So with all of those things covered, talk to me about introduce us to your character this week.
All right. So what we worked on before we started recording, I have created a gunslinger type. Their name is Stranger. The Stranger, pronouns are they, them. They are not particularly brawny. They're not particularly savvy, but they are charming as hell. And they are hoping that that is going to get them through their eternal existence under the sun. They have a gun. I really appreciate this portion of the game where it's like, hey, you are a gunslinger. You have a gun. Talk to me about it. Tell me some things about it. I'll tell you three things about it, Jeff. Number one, it screams. It screams.
A good first detail. A good first detail about a gun.
Number two, it's made of blood crystals. What are those? You tell me. Number three. It's got teeth on strings attached to the handle. Specifically, I'm thinking of these as trophies, and the strings themselves are these, I'm imagining embroidery strings that are blood red that are attached to these teeth. I just really like that detail. They jingle. They're a little bit of bling on that crystal gun.
That's so sick. That rules. fuck. This game is so very good. And so talk to me about why, like, vampires live in the underground, in the distant future of the post-apocalypse landscape with the blazing red sun burning overhead at all hours of the day. All vampires have sort of, like, hidden underground, except for a small number who wander like you. Why are you wandering? Why have you left the safety of the underground, and what keeps you going from place to place?
The Stranger does not remember. Wherever they left a lot of their memories there as well. So they're wandering for a purpose. They're certain there is a purpose. But if there was one, it's something that is being held by somebody else at this point. Somebody else has that information.
I love that. That's very, very, very good. A good answer. And you have arrived. You have, in your travels, arrived at the partially underground, partially above ground, remnant city of Clev. Clev is a city on a ocean of irradiated sort of silt muck.
Amazing.
That sort of like moves almost like water, but like if water was also grasping hands trying to pull somebody into the irradiated mud to dissolve them.
It's quicksand. You have described quicksand.
It's quicksand. if quicksand was sentient and wanted to eat you alive.
Oh no.
It's quicksand. Like if quicksand was sentient and really just hated your guts specifically, is the water on which Clev sits.
Amazing.
Who has sent for you? Let's put it that way. Someone like reached out to you. And, like, has pulled you towards the city of Clev. Is it someone that you've interacted with before? Is it a name that is lost to your, lost to the ether of your memories? Like, what or who has pulled you towards the city?
The stranger is a deeply haunted vampire. Ghosts are a theme that will come up frequently with them. I think one of the ghosts that the stranger has access to is the thing pulling them towards Clev. There has been a almost annoyance, an incessance about this compulsion, and just quiet it. The stranger has given into this request and has found themselves at the gates of Clev.
And you are like, there are ghosts abound in Clev. Whether that is because you have arrived and you are surrounded by these swirling specters is unclear, but like as you walk, skeletons and you know, undead spectral beings like emerge out of walls and like point you in a direction. You walk through these hollowed out streets until you arrive at what appears to be a black box theater. You walk inside, there are a few rows of chairs, and there, walking along the walls of the theater, perfectly perpendicular to you standing on the ground, is the spirit that has summoned you.
This looks so sick in my head. I'm imagining, you know, we arrive at the gates of Clev. We haven't seen the stranger in their entirety just yet. Maybe a glimpse of eyes through a veil, maybe a peek under a cap, maybe the bottom of their boots with their spurs. But when I sit down in this black box theater, I prop my feet up on the seat in front of me, cross them over each other, and we get our full first shot of the stranger. They're wearing boots with ghosts and blood on them, chaps over jeans with more of the same, kind of telling the story of the ghosts that surround them. They almost seem to shift a little bit. They're wearing their shirt, they're wearing a blanket over that, and their face is obscured by this widow's veil under this broad brimmed hat. I think you said that there is an entity in this black box theater.
Yes, there is like a ghost walking like perfectly upright sideways along the walls. He's got a walking cane that he's like tapping on the walls and is just sort of like taking a stroll. When you arrive, does like a little tap dance flourish and like hop, does a little tap dance flourish, and in an instant is standing, leaning effortlessly on this cane on perfectly balanced on top of the seat next to you. So if you are leaning on the chair, like you are staring dead at his ankles as he like leans on top of the chair next to you.
I think the stranger's eyes travel upwards to the ghost's face, and there's a beat. You rang.
The holes of the dead have been awoken, and hops and disappears, peeks out from behind the curtain of the theater, now fully dressed in like a theatrical clown costume with the little hat, fake sort of a Pagliacci aesthetic, kind of like peers out. The gates of the Temple of Rock'n'Roll have been broken, and with it, and like peeks out and kind of like is doing sort of like a theater dance, like a pantomime dance. The veil between our world and those beyond has been cracked and shall peel away. Pauses, does a quick snap, is sitting exactly as you are in the chair next to you. You are someone who is familiar with walking with ghosts.
I think the stranger grunts a little bit.
And with that, the specter like smiles and just keeps smiling wider and wider. You can imagine that you would not want this to be a burden borne by everyone in the world. Is that correct?
I think they put on a big show about mulling it over and thinking about it.
And like halfway through you mulling it over, I think that like the specter has disappeared and in front of you the spectral form of the temple has appeared. The specter has no desire for your bullshit.
I do think that there is a curiosity that wins out as soon as the temple appears. The stranger's feet are once again on the ground and they're kind of leaning forward over their knees, taking a closer look at the spectral temple.
It is this great glass pyramid. It extends out partially over Jeff. The irradiated silt mud.
Jeff, it's a what? Bass Pro Shop.
It is similar to, but crucially not, a Bass Pro Shop. It's not an inaccurate way to think about this.
It has some of the qualities pertaining to...
Aesthetically, very similar to a Bass Pro Shop. And it is partially constructed on top of and over this irradiated silt mud water on the outskirts of Clev. And it is the Temple of Rachnarol. Rachnarol, an ancient being, a god of sorts to the world before. There is a weapon, an object, an unholy axe whose blade could crack the world in two, sitting somewhere in this temple for 1,000 years, for 1,000 millennia, for as long as the blood red sun has burned in the sky, this temple has been sealed off. And you see in this spectral construct the bodies of movement like happening throughout, and the seal of the Temple of Rachnarol has been cracked open, and inside someone is excavating and is hunting for this axe that shall give them this awe-inspiring power, a command over the dead that, well, as someone who has walked with ghosts, you can only imagine what someone could do if they truly held that curse which you bear in their hands and commanded it like an army.
I think the stranger slowly gets to their feet, sort of touches the rim of their hat to the stage, and does a very cool flourish of their blanket on their shoulders as they leave the Black Box Theater.
And I think, like, as you walk out, you look back briefly and you see the specter just standing perfectly still, gives you a two-fingered salute, and then, like, rotating, floats away it back into the ether. And you make your way to the temple. It is broken open is the only way to describe it. This great glass pyramid, the entrance, the wall, some of the lower walls of which have been exploded outwards, and you feel an immediate sense of spectral unease. You feel an immediate sense that, you are phantom blooded. You have the blood of you. Your body is a conduit of ghost energy. You feel like you are drowning for a brief moment as you approach, and as you first kind of step inside of the temple, you feel it's almost like for you, you step inside and you feel like 99% humidity.
Oh,
is how I would describe it. You know, that feeling of like you walk in and it feels like you are swimming in the air itself. Oh.
Yes, yes, everything is slowed down.
That's the feeling, and that's just ghostly energy is just all around you.
Oh my goodness. Every muscle movement is, you have to focus on it consciously in order to complete the movement to go forward.
And you, as you are walking, you feel, you know, the walls pulsing as you pass these altars of demigods and like half renovated, torn down structures. Like, you feel this sense of, I love that analogy so much of like, you feel like your muscles have to you have to make that conscious effort. And in fact, like, you're looking around and you're seeing like the walls are kind of pulsing, like there is an anger to this spectral energy, and I'm going to have you make your first roll.
Ooh.
So rolls, here's how rolling dice works in Bloodbeam Badlands. You have three stats: your blood, your lifeline, the source of your power, your bullets, which are your livelihood and the thing that connects you to the mortal beings alongside you, and your burn, the demise, whether by the sun above you or the world around you. You also have so you're going to roll a number of six-sided dice. This is an imposed roll. I'm going to have you roll your burn.
Okay.
And you're going to, the way that it always works is you try to roll under one of your sources. Your sources are your blood, your lifeline, the source of your power, your sources are your blood, bullets, and burn. Your stats are guts, your brawn and courage, your guile, your wits and cunning, or your guise, your charms and deception.
I gotcha.
You're going to roll under burn, and I'm trying to decide. Actually, and this half of it I'm going to throw to you. You are trying to resist this overwhelming spiritual energy from just like overwhelmingly choking you out. What of your three stats are you holding? Are you holding true to as you push through?
To me, that's guile. That's chutzpah, for lack of a better term.
That feels good. So roll me guile under burn.
All right. My burn stat is 2. I have rolled a 2.
You rolled a 2, and what is your burn?
My burn is 2.
And you rolled a 2.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Great. Great. I'm so glad that this is the first roll of the game.
I have a 1 in guile. I had 1 shot.
All right. So here's what happens when your roll matches your result exactly. Because it's very, very good and very, very fun and very, very sick. And I'm very excited. I have to find it in the book because the way that it describes it is very fun to me specifically.
Can't have it be described any other way.
You have rolled a spectacle. If your lowest die result is equal to your source value, then something explosive happens. You disastrously succeed and triumphantly fail.
Amazing. Amazing.
I think that what this, I mean, it's got to be that you are a walking powder keg who has just walked into a spark factory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you are a conduit to ghosts who have just walked into a room where ghostly energy has been mucked around and fucked with, very specifically. You are sparking a chain reaction. And so, like, you are fine. Like, it is something where, like, you step in and you feel that humidity, you feel that muscle wake, and then suddenly it's like stepping into a pool. Suddenly the water temperature around you has adjusted and you feel fine. And that's when you see the ghosts starting to crawl out of the walls. And it is a lot of them. Hundreds of them.
Are they crawling out of a specific point in the wall, or is it just they're all down the wall? These ghosts are appearing.
I think you are in like a long hallway, And like every surface of the hallway, there are now ghosts crawling just out of it.
Rippling with ghosts, bubbling
and
with
like
ghosts.
Swirling around you as they take more and more corporeal shape, and they start like the only way I can describe it is they start like clapping and thumping.
Oh my goodness. I think this is shaking.
You are surrounded by a swarm. Yeah, the entire temple is shaking. You are surrounded by a chorus, a ghostly chorus clapping and stomping around you.
Incredible.
What are you doing?
I think as I entered the temple, the humidity that I was experiencing, the struggle to just move forward that I was experiencing, there was this instinctive move of my left hand to my holster, just getting ready for trouble. But then the minute, I almost think that switch that you described of like, it's humid and then you enter a pool, I think it's an instantaneous switch. It's that instantaneous relief. My hand kind of falls back to my side and I stand back up straight as this stomping is happening, as the temple is shaking. And I think I very cautiously continue to move forward, wary of the ghosts that are around me. I don't trust them. I've never trusted them, but they seem to be not actively hostile. And I'm going to take my opportunity to keep moving.
I'm going to have you this. I think this is a roll. I think this is a guy's under. What do we think here? What do we think the source is here?
I say I think blood. Like,
blood, that feels good. That feels good. Give me a guys under blood roll. You're rolling all of your guys dice and you're taking the lowest result and comparing it to your blood.
All right. So my lowest result is a 2. My blood score is 4.
All right, then that is a success. You manage to like keep calm, and as you move forward, like the ghostly chorus surrounds you, but that like doesn't touch you at any point. Like they are just watching. They are just an audience.
Creepy. I love how creepy that is.
And there seems to be like perfect balance between, and then suddenly you like, as you make it down this hallway, like the room starts to open up and you can see that like you are in this sort of like central, one of these like many central almost foyer exhibit rooms. You make your way in and suddenly, like, you look and the ghostly chorus kind of, like, floods to behind you as if they are settling in to watch something. They know something that you don't, and that is when you feel more of this rattling, but this is not a spectral rattling. This is, you hear a rumbling under the surface. This is, something is burrowing under the ground and is making its way to your location. And this is when you also see that there are several holes in the walls, like dug out, almost like cave size holes that look about like the size of a 6 to 8 foot creature.
Is there one that is going down?
They all seem to be going down, in various, like, winding ways. They seem to be something has burrowed in and out of this space. There are other tunnels deeper into the temple. Like, these are not necessarily the only way forward, but, like, you can kind of get a sense that, like, whatever is under the ground could either come through one of these holes or dig its way up through the ground or a wall.
It seems to be coming back to this room in some capacity.
Yes.
I think the stranger looks over their shoulder at this chorus of ghosts that are gathered behind them, and they take a seat. They prop an elbow up on a knee. They, you know, very carefully take their blood crystal gun out of their holster and set it by their left hand, ready to use at a moment's notice. But they're going to take a break. They're going to take a second, and they're going to wait for their quarry to come to them.
And you don't have to wait very long. You hear a screech. You hear the sound of a gunshot. And remember we mentioned Revolver Face earlier? Revolver Face, which is a gigantic Tyrannosaurus Rex with a revolver for a face, is thrown through one of these tunnels, rolls, takes a shot, as several 6 foot tall beetles come bursting through various tunnels, and there is a gigantic monster battle unfolding in front of you.
Incredible. Amazing. I'm ready. Let's do this.
And like, you, like, they are not focused on you. They are focused on Revolver Face. That is their quarry. You could sneak by, but you're going to have to sneak by, or you're going to have to fight your way past this thing if you want to get towards. And as you begin to watch this, you hear a electric thrash. You hear the thrum of an electric guitar.
Amazing.
And the entire place rattles and sparks burst out of light bulbs. Something's fucking going on down below. Like whatever is unfolding down below, something is unfolding.
I'm going to have to get through Revolver Face to get down
there. Get through Revolver Face and the giant beetles.
Uh-huh.
It okay. Could just be you move past it. It could be you shoot past it. But it seems like these giant beetles are trying to tear Revolver Face apart. Revolver Face is trying to kill these beetles. And the ghostly chorus is just watching.
I have a fun Tyrannosaurus Rex fact. They can smell for like a 20 mile radius and they can run 30 miles an hour. So if they existed when we did, we would be Tyrannosaurus food.
That's terrifying.
Hey, visit the Field Museum in Chicago. Anyway, I have two options here. I think in the stranger's mind, there are two options. I could sneak, which, I think their immediate reaction to is, how dare I suggest such a thing? Or I could help this monster battle that is unfolding in front of me in one way or another. What kind of beetles are these? Are these like Hercules beetles? What's the vibe without getting too specific?
Let me. I do love a Hercules beetle with
They're
its
good.
Big honking. Big honking pincer mouth. I think they're going to be Hercules beetles. There are four of them, like,
my
thrashing
goodness.
Around and, like, trying to grab at Revolver Face, who keeps, like, taking shots to keep them at bay. Revolver Face is clearly cornered and outnumbered here.
All right. You know what? I'm going to make a decision here. I'm going to help Revolver Face out on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's time slows down a little bit as the stranger takes a breath, takes aim, and is going to fire their blood crystal gun that screams. I think the way this looks is they aim, they fire this unholy scream that the chorus kind of joins into. Streaks out of the gun with the bullet into the closest Hercules beetle that is attacking Revolver Face.
That's great. All right, then you're going to roll me. You're going to roll me a under bullets. This is guts under bullets.
All right. Guts under bullets. So I have one die from guts and six is the number that this is the stat that I have in bullets. Hey, I have just rolled, ladies and gentlemen, a six.
That's a spectacle. That's a spectacle. I think you fire, you take aim, your gun screeches, Revolver Face looks in your direction, and you both take aim and fire at the same beetle at the same time. And the movie Men in Black?
Uh-huh.
You know what happens when they shoot the bad guy alien?
Uh-huh.
That's what occurs. Goop is everywhere.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
But I think that what happens, I think the spectacular failure, or the triumphantly failure here, is one more of these beetles goes after Revolver Face. Two more of them set their eyes on you because it's easier prey.
Uh-huh.
But in a moment, two of these beetles start butting, like in trying to decide which one is going to eat you, they start briefly fighting with each other. And so you are locked in. You are the third in a fight between two beetles trying to decide who's going to get to eat you.
Oh man, that's amazing. Oh, there's beetle schmutz all over the walls.
So much schmutz. And the crowd erupts. To be clear, the crowd loses their minds when that explosion happens.
They are into it. They are all about it. All right, so these two beetles are duking it out in front of me in order to determine which of them gets to eat me. I hate this for myself specifically. I don't want to be eaten. I think it's time. I think it's time that I use my blood.
Sure.
Let me think about this for a second. I think I'm going to activate my powers by spending one blood. So I'm going to knock it down to three.
So every vampire has certain vampiric abilities. You have certain special abilities that are superpowers that you can conjure forth. And you have phantom blood. Your heart is a chamber for the ghosts you have consumed and a lure for those who linger on this world. Your veins carry the curses of those who wish to pass on, imbuing with the ability to channel the spectral energy around you. You have spent a blood, which means you are manifesting a phantasm that you control. You have four abilities that you can choose from by spending one blood. If you spend extra blood, you can make multiple abilities. Do you want this to be a ward? The soul of a loved protector? A hound? A prowling beast? A swarm? A collection of writhing ghosts? Or a lance? The soul of a fearsome warrior?
I think I'm going to go with swarm because I have an audience. And I think the way this looks when I'm activating the superpower is a black hole opens in my chest and it howlingly like siphons the gathered ghosts that are close by through my body and forms this swarm that is then ejected out at the Hercules beetles that are fighting.
That's great. That rules. I really love that. And I think that I think what I'm going to say here is you could attempt to you have pinned down one of these beetles. The other one runs at it and tackles it. The ghosts are entangling the two of them. So they are wrapped up in one another. It's not going to the ghosts are not going to be able to destroy or kill one of these beetles or either of these beetles. But they are between the beetles fighting each other and the beetles fighting the swarm of ghosts. They are entangled with each other. You hear another big kapow and another gigantic explosion of goop as Revolver Face erupts this fourth beetle, and you have a chance to flee and make your way south. And Revolver Face gives you a nod as the revolver cocks to kind of be like, "We're good."
Out of respect, the stranger is going to touch the brim of their hat before diving southward.
That's great. Okay, you make your way, you run. Give me this is going to be a roll. I'm going to give you a bonus on this though. So let me remind myself exactly what happens when I give you a bonus. Increase your source value by one. This is going to be, under blood.
Ooh, okay.
And I think this is probably guts under blood.
All right. Is my source value increasing permanently? I knocked it down to a three. Is it going back up to a four?
No, you only knock down a source value if you are choosing to auto succeed at a roll. Otherwise, it always stays flat. So it should still be at a four from before.
Okay, cool.
And so this would push it up to a five just for the purposes of this roll.
I gotcha. Okay, so this would be a guts roll under blood.
Yes, so you want to get a four or lower unless you want a spectacle.
What a cool sentence. That was such a cool sentence.
It really was.
Good. So my blood value with that bonus is a five. I have rolled a five on one die.
Palomi, you are truly making my entire day with these dice rolls. I cannot express the joy that I am feeling. I think So what I think the success is, the terrible success is that, like, you get away. You run. And I think what happens as you are running is the crowd roars and cheers as they see this fight erupt, right? Then you hear another strum of this electric guitar. And you feel the electricity pulse and, like, neon lights light up. The entire room lights up in neon colors and, like, cycles through all of the different shades of the rainbow for a moment. There is this cycle. It erupts. There's an explosion. Shit goes wild. And for a moment, like, you feel, like, that black hole in your chest bursts open. And you feel all of those ghosts that were watching in this audience, like, pull towards you and start to swirl around each other and become sort of a, like, ghost, like, sort of a ghost blob monster. Like, they swirl into one massive ghost. Ghost Voltron is the only way to describe it. Thousands of ghosts swirling around into one half-formed body.
I'm capable of refining ectoplasm into a Voltron.
thrashing and chasing behind you specifically. Hurtling towards you as it chases towards where this guitar music is coming from.
Oh my goodness.
You are now being chased by this ghost Voltron.
Well, I'm gonna run faster. Is it okay? So it's larger than I am.
It is probably 15 feet tall. It is okay. Crashing up against the ceiling of the temple, and, like, as it does, like, you can tell, like, oh, this thing is turned corporeal. It is, like, tearing up the roof of this temple.
It's going through walls by crushing them. It's going through walls.
Like, there's times where it goes through walls. There's times where it crashes and crumbles walls, and it is just hurtling towards you.
All right. I think I'm going to use another tool in my belt. I think I'm going to run, but it quickly reaches that point where my muscles and my bones are screaming at me for a rest, for a break. And I think I push a little harder before I take my gun. I whirl around. I load it with special bullets. I think they are gold and silver tipped. I empty my carbine. I put these new bullets in as this thing is barreling down on me. I aim and I fire. I am using my grasping ammo to try and control this thing.
What a cool, like, I feel like this game creates just a great number of cool sentences.
Truly, truly. I think that's a great premise for any game.
So drop your bullets by one.
All right.
And this is considered an auto success as you are using cursed ammo and you are using grasping ammo. What does it look like when you pierce the demiplane of the dead and ghastly hands pull this thing into the ground?
I think, you know, we have that cool shot of the bullet leaving the chamber and we hear that echoing scream that we heard before as it's speeding towards this amalgamation, this ghost Voltron. We see these spectral hands kind of ghostly come up from the ground, almost framing the bullet as it's speeding by. And the bullet passes straight through, I think, and hits the wall on the other side of this amalgamation of semi-corporeal ghosts. But the hands themselves, they're bony, they're spectral. They wrap around this thing and they sink their fingers into the mass of it.
Fuck that rules. This game is so cool. Yeah, you entangle this thing just long enough for you to run into the central summoning chamber, like into, like, this large chamber that has been partially, like, hollowed out with, like, construction big honking like construction robots, like, you know, the robot, like the robot suits from the Mega Man video games that you could ride on for a minute, like big drill hand things have punched them. But they also, but these robots in particular look like shit. They have been, they have scratch marks and are missing chunks. They have been scavenged from something. And you see vampires, you can, you know, vampires, blood dripping from their mouths, also kind of looking like shit, also with like chunks of metal, like metal plates, like sewn into their shoulders. These are cyborg vampires who have seemingly like grafted makeshift technology onto their bodies. Like they have seemingly made themselves into cyborgs with some sort of scavenged technology, and they are scurrying around setting up like audio equipment and speakers, and this like, and you see on the top of this stage standing is a non-vampire, a human necromancer who is stitched into like the power, like is not stitched into, like is, has like on his back the part of the power loader suit from Alien, right?
Oh my
goodness. Big mech suit, just like the middle part is like stitched onto his back, and there are tubes pumping blue fluid into him as he holds an electric guitar, and he just like, you can see him like messing with it and just like cackling. And finally, one of these cyborgs puts a microphone in front of him, and you arrive just in time to hear him speak.
This is so cool.
It is time that I, blessed with the blood of President Dracula harvested from his biodome, wielding the axe of Slash, shall conjure the ghosts of the gods of old, and I shall bring forth a new age. It shall not be an age of humanity. It shall not be an age of vampire. It shall be an age in my own image. It's time to rock. And thrashes the guitar. And again, the entire building lights up and energy thrashes. And you see the ghostly images of these demigods begin to swirl in the air. A figure in all, like a figure in black is floating and ominously looming down. Beasts of the elements of like living souls of the elements themselves, of earth, of air, of fire, swirling. Each of these entities are thrashing. You see that specter from earlier, walking along the walls, and they are all just watching this necromancer as he conjures with this guitar. As the loudest music starts playing outside my window, which is,
that's,
in fact, thematically appropriate. I'm not editing it out.
That is so cool. Oh man. There's so many cool things happening right now. I think this is happening as I enter the room. I keep barreling towards the stage as he starts to play, and as these souls of the elements are swirling above, this black figure is swirling above. And I think I do the reverse of a stage dive.
Mm-hmm.
I get onto the stage by leaping onto it, onto him specifically. And I think I'm trying to wrest this guitar from him.
I am going to immediately drop your body or your blood by one. Your blood immediately drops by one as like he starts playing the guitar and force lightning comes out, is the only way to describe it. And blasts you with electricity immediately, and you are consumed with electricity as you make this battle.
My skeleton shows through.
100%. We get the skeleton shot. And now make a, I think this is guts under blood, as you are like physically fighting this entity. But I'm also going to drop your blood by an additional one for this roll and impose a penalty because the blood of President Dracula is pumping through this guy's veins.
All right, so that means my blood is down to a 3. So if I get a 3 on the singular dice, we'll see what happens. I got a 5.
Okay. He eventually, like, he gives one final big strum and just, like, blasts you with a sound wave back off, like, into a wall on the far end of the stage. As the beings, and like that ghostly chorus is now has fully flooded into the room, split back into a million eyes, and they are all watching you alongside these like demigod figures in the air as this necromancer, like, you can just see the energy like pulsing into him as he like continues to conjure this power more and more and more.
Where's the source of the energy? Is still the guitar?
It seems like it is the playing of the guitar is like pulling this energy from the air and from the sound of the music and from the energy around them in this space is feeding into the guitar, is feeding into him.
Just quick question, quick check. Is the guitar plugged into anything?
I feel like it's gotta be. I did say it was an electric guitar. That does feel correct.
Oh, God.
You know what? I'm going to say it is plugged into, here's what it's plugged into. There is, we're going full. there is like a big giant glass tube with the half decimated body of Dracula inside of it. Dracula has seemingly been exploded, so half of the body's not there. Think the angel from Evangelion, where it's just like a torso and an arm and a head. You see the bowie knife is jammed squarely into Dracula's heart, and like tubes of that same blue fluid, the blood of President Dracula, are being drained out of the dead body of Dracula that is being then like put into little capsules that is being pumped. That is then like, you see someone grab one of these capsules and like plug it into this back plate that this necromancer has. Like, they are feeding him Dracula's blood.
I have a wild idea.
Wild ideas are the best ideas.
I gotta get my blood into those power arms that he's got going on.
I did not see that one coming, I'll be honest.
I've got the ghost blood.
Uh-huh.
It's being amplified.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can make this work. All right, here's the thing. Are there other... are there other electric guitars around, or is this
there are now.
Perfect. I'm grabbing one off of the wall.
Great.
I am very hurriedly, I think I'm like grabbing tubes from this Dracula apparatus and attaching them to myself in various ways, and then attaching it to the guitar. Hey, we're gonna battle the bands, this man.
Sure.
I think I pluck a few experimental strings just to get my head back in the game, my head in the space that it needs to be in.
You pluck the strings and immediately you see the walls, or you see like the ceiling open up, and like you feel a distinct alternate energy flood through your body as you pluck the strings of this second guitar, and you look up and see that you feel like you can see the eternity and cosmos in the sky, as you see like the stars themselves take like form an eye and watch you, and like the demons of the abyss swirl around it, and also the meow of a cat.
I think that the guitar that I've grabbed, it is a bass guitar. Our friend with the power arms, the necromancer, he is playing a guitar. I am playing a bass guitar. I am going to lay down the meatiest bass riff I can summon.
That feels good. That feels good. You summon this bass riff. I gotta figure out what playing a sick riff is. Paloma, what do you think you're rolling here to make a sick bass riff? What do we think that the roles are in this?
The guys, to make the status guys. It has to be guys. It can't be anything else. I think blood is the source, because hear me out. I think the reason is that's what is powering both of these guitars.
That feels good. No, that feels good. That feels good. It's guys under blood. It's guys under blood.
This is the first time I will be rolling two die. Oh, wait, no, I think I did guys earlier. My blood is three. I have rolled two threes.
Incredible. And I believe that is, you said your blood was a three?
Uh-huh. Yep.
This is the most absolutely wild that I've ever, this is one of the most wild, like, dice rolling scenarios that I've ever encountered in any game ever. I think that it's spectacularly, like, tell me about, like, how your plan works.
I think the way this works, I'm laying down this riff. I think it's complementing whatever the Necromancer is playing really, really well. And that is what is bringing the, that is what is, because my bass riff is stealing the show here, the power is mine. I am winning this. The audience loves this bass riff. They're losing their minds.
Yeah. And, like, I think that what happens is the blood tubes erupt, right? Like, the blood tubes, yeah, the Dracula's blood in them, to. Like, they shatter. You hit a bass riff that's so sick that the tubes shatter.
The reverb and, like, just destroys them.
I think that the way that it, they shatter, and I think for a moment, like, we see Dracula wake up. For just a moment. Like, he's dead, but, like, his soul returns to his body, and, like, in doing so, rips, like, you feel, or you see, like, a thing about Dracula that you are learning in this moment, is that apparently Dracula can control his blood remotely. And you watch this necromancer get ripped into pieces.
Oh, man.
Get ripped to shreds, and the blood, like, flows back into Dracula. And with one final note, you riff, and Dracula explodes. And the only thing that is left is his beating heart, that one of these like vampires grabs and runs off with. Because some remnant of Dracula must live.
Must be saved.
And where it triumphant, where it fails is that now there is a cosmic demon staring you down.
That's so cool.
Staring you down, like, and not approaching you aggressively, but just like, you wield the bass almost as well as I did. How would you like to be the avatar for an entity much greater than yourself?
Oh. Just clarifying here. The entity's you, right?
Well, you would be a conduit for me, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about the ghost situation? Like, is that going to continue, or?
I like having an audience around.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. No, I think I'm good.
I think that, like, as you say that, I think that you do have to make a roll here.
Heck yes.
Because you are holding the bass guitar of this entity.
It is connected to my blood.
This is going to be Guile under blood. This is Guile under blood, uh-huh, is what this uh-huh. is.
Ladies and gentlemen, my blood is three. I have rolled a five.
I think I'm going to ask you what I think that you are able to walk away from this. But you are not going to be able to walk away from this without paying a cost. What do you have to sacrifice to this demon to allow this demon to walk, to let you walk away?
Oh, man. Man, oh, man. I think There's so many things I could sacrifice, Jeff.
That's what it. That's good. What is it gonna? What's the choice again? I think that's the choice you got to make.
The first thing that came to mind was my hat.
That feels good. That feels really great.
Yeah, I think I have to sacrifice my hat and my veil, everything that's covering my head and my face. All of that goes. He looks so cool.
He looks very cool. He looks very cool as he puts on the hat. And I think as he puts on the hat, what I'm going to say is actually like it causes him to take a corporeal form.
Yes, I was thinking the exact same thing.
And stands there for a second, puts on the hat, like takes the bass guitar from you, straps it on his back. It's good to walk around again. Fellas, let's jam. And you see the cosmos swirl around this demon cowboy as he walks off into the mist. And you are left alone on this empty stage as the spectral ghost appears before you. It took great courage to walk away from an eternity of power.
Yeah, it's not really worth the headache.
I suppose that is true. There are certainly downfalls that come with eternity, but that is the nature of greatness. And I think walks up to you, grabs his cane, and like taps your forehead. Consider this your payment. And you are flashed with an image. An image of a vampire. You are flashed with an image of a space far away. You're not even necessarily sure what the location is. But you can see that there are ghost wards so all over it. Like every door is marked. There are salt circles and all of these different like ghost warding things things designed to keep ghosts at bay, specifically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in it you can see describe to me the vampire that you see like putting these wards up.
Ooh. I think instantly it's clear that they're taller than the stranger. Mm-hmm. They've got long black hair that's like streaked with gray. I imagine that they're wearing like a very structured sort of top with a very high neckline that's kind of like hits them right under their chin, these like almost 80s power shoulders. Mm-hmm. And otherwise has like a very slim line to the outfit that they're wearing. Their eyes are purple.
I realize, so we see the purple of their eyes. What are the color? I realize we didn't get this on mic and I have to have it on mic. What are the colors of your eyes to contrast this?
I love the idea that like this other vampire gets a sense that they're being seen by someone mm-hmm. they don't know. So their purple eyes kind of shoot towards mine. Mine are the kind of pink that reflects the sunset, the kind of pink that you find on the side of a mountain as the sun is setting in New Mexico. There is a mountain range called the Sandia Mountains, and they are called this because Sandia in Spanish means watermelon. It is so pink. It is such a rich pink that it is described as watermelon pink, this light that hits the side of these mountains.
And this pair of purple eyes, you see them look up with the knowledge that they are being looked at by someone that they don't know, and they lock eyes with your eyes, and that distinct Sandia pink, that look on their eyes changes. This vampire does know you. In fact, this vampire is the one person in the world that knows your true name.
Whoa!
And has been arranging this space such that you can have a place, even if you don't stay permanently, where the ghosts will stay at bay.
That's awesome.
And with that, the specter disappears. And you have a vision of a place somewhere far away to work towards. And that's game.
I clap softly. That was amazing.
Thrilled. That was so absolutely joyful. Now, can I reveal my very, very silly hand?
Please do.
Was it clear that you were excavating the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yes, it was explicitly clear.
Okay, good. I was not sure. I wasn't sure it was clear.
Oh my God. I have to tell you, I have to recommend a song to both you and the audience. The bass riff that I was imagining, there is a song. It is called Drugula. And the way this song opens it's metal. I mean, it's objectively, the genre is metal. It is a song by Electric Wizard called The Satanic Rites of Drugula. I highly recommend that you listen to it.
I will listen to this because I'm so excited. I'm very, very happy. That game was so much fun. Did you have fun? What did you like? What were your favorite moments? Talk to me about the experience.
Every sentence that came out of our mouths was dope.
I feel the same way.
And the number of times I rolled the exact number I needed to for what is effectively a crit in this game, incredible. Outstanding.
And it's the fact that it's not just a crit, but it's specifically like a crit success and fail at the same time.
Spectacle.
Very fucking funny.
Oh, good.
The most funny. That was so much fun. I'm really, really happy.
Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. I'm very pleased with where we ended up to.
I'm very, very happy. That game was unbelievable. What an experience. What a joy. Well, thank you so much for playing this with me. I could not have had a better time. This was a delight.
Thank you for thinking of me the minute you did.
Truly, like I said, in my head, I ran through the list and I was like, we have done two of these three episodes. I was like, who do I want to reach out to? Who do I think is going to really like love the aesthetics of this game, of like the aesthetics of the West and vampires and all kinds of, there was no hesitation in my mind of like, I should ping Palomi. Just that should be the person I talk to. I'm so happy. Real quick, before we wrap up, where can people find you and your work online?
You can find me on Twitter at PalomiSP. You can also find me on the other Twitter app, also at PalomiSP. You can also find a lot of my work at PalomiPrayTap.com. I do a little bit of layout work on the side when I freelance, as well as, you know, any collections of podcasts that I've been on before, including Party of One. You'll find that there. Otherwise, catch me in the ether, I guess.
All right. Well, this was so much fun. I'm beaming about how good this was.
This
blood
is
beaming,
great.
Specifically.
I had so much fun.
I'm really so glad. And now I'm going to throw it over to me in the future so that he can wrap up with the show. Take a future me. Thanks, past me. And thanks again to Palomi for coming on the show. That game was genuinely the sickest shit on the planet. Like, I love this game so much. I love playing games with Palomi so much. This experience was delightful, and I am just absolutely overjoyed. I could not be happier with it. Thank you so much for playing this with me. I had a blast. Be sure to check the show notes for links to all of Palomi's work, and be sure to head to vidityavaletti.itch.io to pick up your own copy of Bloodbeam Badlands. And as long as it's still a fucking thing, you can follow Palomi on Twitter at PalomiSP. Then while you're on Twitter, follow us at Party of One Pod. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Party of One Podcast. Find us on TikTok at Party of One Podcast. Find us on Tumblr at Party of One Pod. Subscribe to our newsletter at buttondown.email/Party of One Podcast. And join our Discord community at bit.ly/Party of One Discord. If you enjoy the show, there's a lot of ways to support it. You can support us financially at patreon.com/JeffStormer or ko-fi.com/JeffStormer. You can give us a nice iTunes review, shout us out to a friend, give us some love on social media. You can buy some Party of One merch at bit.ly/Party of One merch. Or, if you're looking for more great podcast content, you can check out All My Fantasy Children, which is a character creation, storytelling, and world-building podcast that I make with my best friend in the world, Aaron Catano-Saez. We take a listener-submitted prompt and spin it into an original fantasy character, populating a shared universe one story at a time. You can also check out Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, which is an actual play about a heartless witch, a cozy house, and the many people making their homes inside. Both of those you can find wherever you get your podcasts. Party of One is, as always, produced and edited by Jeff Stormer and Jen Frank. Music for the show comes from the song Infinite Lives by Megaran, featuring the D&D Sluggers, and the Party of One logo is by Evan Rowland. If you'd like to inquire about advertising rates coming onto the show as a guest or about press coverage of the show, you can email me at partyofonepodcast@gmail.com. And unless I am mistaken, that is all we do here. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Remember to fight the forces of fascism every single day. Remember that self-love and self-care are radical and defiant acts of resistance. And as always, party on, everybody.